Hey there, you're listening to What the Riff? Join us as we remember the great rock and roll hits from a month between 1965 and 1995. We're going to riff on all things about the bands, the members, and the goings-on during that time. We hope to inspire you to find and download the songs you hear today, whether you're fans who forgot about some of these tracks or maybe never even heard them before. Check out our blog at whattheriff.com or follow us on Facebook at What the Riff. Here's a shout out to our sponsors, Right Column Financial, offering CFO and bookkeeping services for small business, Stanton Electric, a commercial electrical specialist, and Marbury Creative Group, a brand development agency that helps companies tell it better. So let's turn up the volume and enjoy this episode of What the Riff?
Ice skater Nancy Kerrigan is attacked by Tonya Harding's bodyguard. Lorena Bobbitt is found temporarily insane in court after cutting off her husband's penis. And a 6.6 earthquake hits Los Angeles, killing 60, causing $30 billion in damages. This is January 1994, and you're listening to What the Riff. I'm Wayne.
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
And with us is fan of the show, Joel Neighbors. Welcome, Joel.
Hey, hey guys. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here.
And now we've got Brian bringing our album pick. What you got, Brian?
Gentlemen, this is Alice in Chains from the album Jar of Flies.
Where did she get her start?
In Wonderland.
Any relations to Alice Cooper?
Not a bit. Actually, these guys are from the Seattle grunge movement. And these guys were as... When you think about the Seattle grunge movement, of course, you think about Nirvana.
Yeah.
You think about Pearl Jam, Soundgarden. Well, these guys are right up there as far as the success. We're listening to Layne Staley, who was the lead singer at the time. And the band members at the time of the recording are Jerry Cantrell, who's one of the founding members. He was the lead guitarist. He did backing vocals. He also did lead vocals on a couple of songs that we're going to hear today. You also had Mike Inez, who replaced Mike Starr in the band because Mike Starr got hooked on drugs and just couldn't be dependable.
Mm.
Imagine that, a hard rock man.
Huh? What instrument?
The bass.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob. And, of course, Mike Inez does some vocals as well. Then on drums, you've got Sean Kenny, who was one of the co-founders with Jerry Cantrell that started the band. The band actually formed in 1987.
Oh.
And so they were part, as I mentioned, a part of the grunge movement. A lot of people also classify them as, you see on iTunes, they're classified as hard rock.
Uh-huh.
Well, that may be true. The band name of Alice in Chains, I was about to say Pearl Jam. But anyway, Alice in Chains came from a glam metal band that Layne Staley came from called Alice in Chains. So the guy said, well, that's dissolved. We'll just take that, and they ran with it for this band.
You know what? I really like the acoustic guitar in this one. That was a tremendous lead-in. I mean, was nice.
And that's a good lead-in to the next segment there, Rob. This is truly an acoustic album. All acoustic instruments. So this is a really great, great album.
Yeah, it's a quite departure from, you know, the previous big hit off the previous album was The Rooster.
Oh, man.
And that's such a great song, and I'm listening to this voice, and I'm just going, man, call me The Rooster, and I'm just going, oh, man, what a deep
line.
Voice.
They've come to snuff The Rooster.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. It was a debate for me today to either do that album or to do this one, and I chose this album because of its uniqueness with all acoustic instruments. And just a great quality album. It's an interesting concept because Layne Staley was talking about they were on tour for a longest time. And basically they said, you know what, we've been on the road for forever. Let's just go for a few days and bring some acoustic instruments. Let's just see what we can come up with. It was only supposed to be for a few days. Well, guess what? It turned into two or more weeks. And then they cut this album.
It's nice.
So this really kind of reminds me of the MTV Unplugged.
Yeah.
You know, these guys all rock, but at the same time, commercially, they got a lot of airplay from the MTV Unplugged, and that really exposed them to some people who maybe would never see them in concert, but you listen to it unplugged, and you're like, yeah, these guys are pretty good.
Right.
This is cool.
Joel, you're correct. I mean, MTV Unplugged was a big stepping stone for a lot of these grunge groups.
Yeah. We just listened to the song Nutshell. That was one of the releases of the songs. Here, we're going to send to the next one, which I have to say, gentlemen, is my favorite of the album. And you've heard it before, but I never get tired of hearing it. And it's called I Stay Away. I mean, just killer. Well, you're about to hear it anyway. But I Stay Away is lead singer Lane Staley, according to SongFacts, said that he wrote the lyrics to the song when he came out of rehab and was sober for a short time. When he started shooting up again, he wrote another song we're going to hear, but this is when he wrote this song. He just came out. And we've talked about the addiction to heroin before, and it's just it's crippling. And unfortunately, he fell victim to that. He battled it. They actually, after they recorded this, they were supposed to go on to a huge stadium tour with the Metallica and some other heavy rock, heavy metal bands, and they had to cancel at the last minute because Staley was just too wicked out.
He couldn't do it.
And imagine the fans looking forward to this huge mega show. And what a lineup. I mean,
yeah,
Metallica, these guys, and I forget who else was on that tour, but they were replaced by another group that I'm not familiar with, but I would have loved to just seen these guys. I mean,
it's kind of funny because his voice doesn't necessarily, when he does that gravelly thing, it doesn't fit in with the acoustic guitar, but I mean, it does, but it sounds odd that it does.
But you hear Staley's voice, but you also hear Jerry Cantrell. This is the two guys singing here.
Oh, that's what it is. See, then.
Yeah. This is both. Yeah, it's so effective. You just kind of, oh, God, I Stay Away. What a great song. And also, there's a video. I don't know if you've ever seen the video, but if you haven't, we'll put it out on our Facebook page. You can check it out on YouTube as well. It's basically the stop motion animation that is used a lot back in those days. But
I love that stuff.
You mean like the Peter Gabriel stuff?
Stuff like that.
Okay.
And it's basically just portrays the band members as circus performers. I mean, listen to that. I just love that voice. The strings and the horn sections were used in the song, which is not typical, but you can hear them.
Yeah, I heard the violin there.
Yeah, you can hear the horns, and it's coming up. It's not typical. So this is an atypical song where they actually bring in extra instruments, wind and as far as, just to add to, just a great sound.
A little bit of electric guitar there, so obviously.
Yep. But here comes good.
Hey, Brian, going back to your point about the addiction and kind of what seems to plague a lot of the singers or the acts, and I've always wondered, is it the qualities that lead to addiction, does that also contribute to some of their creative ability? Because a lot of these guys seem to have like a tortured, they're trying to get this stuff out that's inside them, and it's we benefit from it as an audience, but at the same time, the horrors they go through for addiction, but it tends to create some fantastic music.
Well, yeah, I think some of the best music comes out of, well, obviously it's all stories. They're telling stories, and if it's a story in their own life, that makes it even more powerful. And I think you're right, Joel. It's their expression of what they've been through.
Well, to that point, Rolling Stone, when they did the review, Paul Evans of Rolling Stone said that this album is quote-unquote darkly gorgeous. I've never heard that. So, if you're,
that's a good description.
It is. It's darkly gorgeous. So, and I get it, to your point. But I think, too, what happens a lot of times is they fall into a trap. They think, oh, I can handle this. This is making me more creative. Then all of a sudden, they can't get out. This next song is another song that this is probably the album is mostly known for. And you've heard it. And I've heard it, and many of you listening have heard it. This one's called No Excuses.
Yeah.
It's just along the same line about it. The acoustics.
Boy, this really makes me think of 1994.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just...
Now, this is where Lane Staley... He's talking about his battle here. Lane Staley wrote that he and Jerry Cantrell are doing it again. You can hear the two voices. But this is where Lane Staley is talking about his battle to overcome the heroin addiction. The Unfortunately, the band became inactive 2 years later when his drug problems became just too troublesome. He just...
Well, you get somebody that young, because they're in the early 20s, a lot of money and a lot of time on their hands, because they're not touring constantly.
Right.
They're just, you know, they're doing going into the studio, then they'll go out and tour, but then, you know, you're on stage for 2-3 hours at the most, and then suddenly you got a lot more time still to do something.
Yep.
And unfortunately, alcohol or drugs takes part of that.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting to note also, a lot of these artists believe that that's what makes them better. Remember, we covered Joe Walsh not too long ago, mm-hmm. and he was talking about how when he got sober, he was afraid he wouldn't be good anymore.
Right. Well, I watched an interview recently with Bret Michaels, of course, lead singer for Poison, and also a solo artist now. He was saying that, you know, about drugs and rock and roll. He said, you know, you always heard the thing that rock stars waste all their money on drugs. He goes, no. He says, drugs are free. He says, it's the decisions you make on drugs that cause you to lose all your money.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting point.
People give you the drugs.
Yeah, they're just handed to you. And then when you're all high and everything, you make stupid decisions. So I thought that was interesting. But
I love this harmony.
Jerry Cantrell, Lane Staley. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
I never realized it was two guys singing. I thought they just had his voice redone.
You'll also hear Mike Inez in there, so there might be more than two in the chorus there. But yeah, it's at least two guys.
One thing the Jar of Flies album cover. Once again, we go back to that. That is kind of almost kind of freaky looking, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it is.
Got those, quite literally, a jar of flies and this little kid, and it's tinted red, if I remember.
Yeah, it is. Kind of an orangey red.
This little kid kind of looking through it.
Yeah. It's like you would do with lightning bugs,
yeah.
except it's flies.
Yeah, that's right. It's not very much on the appealing side. Yeah.
At least he's not pulling the wings off of them.
Oh. But I mean, I can vividly remember, you know, being here in Atlanta, you know, and I'd been here for 2 years, and I got introduced to Pearl Jam the year before, and these guys, Soundgarden, all within a very close proximity.
Stone Temple Pilots.
Oh yeah, all that stuff. I mean, a welcome relief for me instead of going to techno and all that stuff. So, all that stuff to me was so refreshing. But this is Friday night for me. Going home, going out into the neighbor cul-de-sac, popping a few tops, having the music jamming in the back, and these guys were on there.
Yeah, this was, you know, for the younger guys crowd, but at the same time, 40-year-olds like us would listen to it and appreciate it.
Oh yeah.
And it's still like, it felt like, okay, yeah, this, I can relate to this a little bit.
Yeah, it wasn't the screaming thing. It was just the quality of the music. And you raised a good point too, Joel, about the acoustic, what they did on MTV Unplugged. That just shot them to superstardom.
Well, you know, like in the 80s, MTV was really all about the video.
Right.
You know, the song, I think you made this point in an earlier episode about, you know, the song was cool, but what's the video going to be?
Right.
That was the 80s. And then in the 90s, I think it shifted more to the actual music. The video kind of took a backseat. Yeah. The Unplugged, and these guys are just sitting up there and they're just playing.
That's yeah. a good point. Yeah, I mean, that's yeah. really stripped down when you're doing Unplugged. There's nothing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now this last track we're listening to is called Don't Follow, and it's more of a deep cut, but just listen to the quality of the voice as well as the quality of the guitar. You don't hear any percussion in this. It's just, you know, a mellow tune. It's just, you're hearing Cantrell as well on his guitar, but you also hear, of course, Lane Staley's voice here.
You were talking about the album cover. I saw a little bit of a write-up about it, and the photographer did this. His name is Rocky Shank, and this is a quote. "I have fond memories of shooting this album cover in my dining room. It was just me and my assistant and a child whose name I've forgotten. My assistant made multiple trips up the street to gather hundreds of flies with a butterfly net at some horse stables. Flies kept dying, the kid kept complaining, and my assistant kept gathering more flies. The album was nominated for a Grammy for Best Recording Package, and I still have the jars."
Hopefully you got rid of the flies.
Yeah.
But
they multiplied since then.
Yeah, I wanted to point out, too, guys, on this one, Cantrell, instead of Lane Staley doing the opening This is Jerry Cantrell doing the opening, but Staley joins him on the harmony. So this is kind of a little twist.
Yeah, listen to that harmonica. That's interesting, too.
But it's a nice little melancholic, and it's just beautiful.
All right, top hits of January 1994. Mariah Carey had Hero. Bryan Adams, Rod Stewart, and Sting had All for Love. It was a combo, if you guys remember that one. Ace of Base, All That She Wants. Really wasn't into Ace of Base myself. Janet Jackson again, and DRS had Gangster Lane. So we started getting some of the hip-hop stuff going on.
Yeah, I remember that. I love how soft this is.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so funny when, you know, if you compare this to Stay Away, mm-hmm. Stay Away, it's a big difference.
Yep. No, this was one of the three of the singles they released. They released Nutshell, I Stay Away, and this was the third release off the album. Ironically, No Excuses, that it was never officially released as a single for whatever reason, but it got such airplay.
Yeah.
It was a very popular song.
And then, of course, you'll find out we're going to be featuring one of these other songs as our instrumental at the end of this podcast. Yeah. Don't anticipate, but it's a good one, too. Listen to that. I feel like I'm on Sesame Street.
But it's just, I mean, they're, as I said at the beginning, it's just really, it gives a great portrayal of their musicianship. I mean, you don't have to have the loud amp. You don't have to have all the glitz and glamour. I mean, these are just great musicians that this album just really reveals, I think.
Well, you can hear all the instruments. It's not the wall of sound that we featured, like Boston or ELO, and it's just a major thing. It's
wall of sound. Yeah. It's not. It's obviously stripped down.
Yeah. I think that makes it neat. And I guess that's really a hallmark of the grunge movement, isn't it? I mean, it's like, you know, just throw on some ratty jeans and a flannel shirt. Don't worry about shaving. Don't worry about your hair. You know, just get up and go.
Yeah.
Kind of 1994, I think, was like that a bit.
Yeah.
I was picking up a little bit.
Oh,
kind of interesting.
But, I, you know, before this album, I really was never crazy about acoustics.
Yeah.
Only. But now, after, you know, being reminded that it is a great concept, if you can do it, and they were very successful at doing it.
Yeah, this is a nice album pick. Thanks for bringing it to us, Brian.
Yeah, it's a little different also. You know, we usually don't do the kind of acoustic type thing, and it really does. But it's still rocked.
Oh, yeah.
That's the nice thing about it.
I've been my headphones have been blaring all week.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
you could sneak these songs, you could sneak them into a kind of a more of a sit-down, nicer restaurant, having an acoustic guy playing it.
Coffee shop.
And the older, you know, 60-year-old lady, oh, this is a nice song. Yeah. Who is this? And, you know, the waiter who's, you know, taking the order says, oh, this is Alice in Chains. And she's like, who?
Exactly. So this is our entertainment track brought to us by Right Column Financial. And how do we end up with this one, Wayne?
Well, this is a soundtrack. Reality Bites was the big movie of January 1994. You remember Ethan Hawke on that? And I mean, what was nice about this album is the album really overshadowed the movie. And the thing is back at the time, you know, they're trying to do the grunge thing with, you know, trying to hop on that. You know, Winona Ryder was on there. I kind of consider her the Molly Ringwald of the 90s.
Right.
And she was in a lot of those movies. And, you know, the thing is everybody were basically slackers and grunge people and didn't go see this movie.
Yeah.
And it's a really kind of funny movie. There's some moments there that just hit it off. Ben Stiller was the director, and he starred in it also.
Oh, really?
Which was interesting. He was one of his directing credits. So,
well, who is this?
This is The Indians.
Because I was
Bed
trying to
of Roses. The album.
Sound sounds like it sounds like Kate a little bit from the B-52s to me. Can't remember her last name. Drawing
Pearson.
A blank.
Well,
Kate Pearson.
This is not even one of the hits off of it. The big hit was "Stay" by Lisa Loeb. Yeah, that was very kind of mellow, and I just didn't want to go. It was the number one hit off this album. And once again, this was an album that sort of had both old songs, new songs. You remember the old song that was on there?
Yeah, My Sharona.
My Sharona. What was that about? What was on, in the movie? You remember what they were doing in the movie on the My Serona?
I don't.
They were in a gas station, and the song came up, and they go, "Hey, turn it up!" And they started dancing in My Serona. And that actually kind of happened to me back in the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we back when I was in college, we had a friend. We called him Ghost.
Was he very pale?
No, he just kind of showed up and disappeared. Just, you know, but he had one of those big giant vans that, you know, back in the day, those Chevy vans or whatever else that ends up having one of those hinge doors open up and it's carpeted in the back. And there's a group of us. We went partying, party hopping, and we stopped to get gas. And we had the music. I guess he had some JBL speakers in the back and everything. Probably with the B-52s or something over there. And we all just kind of pop out. And while he's getting gas, we're dancing in the parking lot. And the parking attendant actually came out and gave us a six-pack of beer and goes, "Man, we want to keep the party going. You guys keep on coming back," you know, and everything. So we were just raising heck and just having a good time. But, you know, it was something that was different and fun.
You opened the doors, did a whole big puff of smoke
No. Just a lot of beer cans.
I'll have to tell that story one day.
But Juliana Hatfield 3 had Spin the Bottle. Big Mountain had Baby, I Love Your Way. Crowded House, Locked Out. Squeeze, Tempted was in this. So You Two, All I Want Is You. So there was a bright, good crossover on that. So it was really a nice album. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. That's the reason I actually bought the album. I think I watched the movie like everybody else at the time when it finally came out on HBO or regular TV.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie's fine. It's a romantic comedy of Generation X grungers.
You know,
sort of like a millennial.
Well, now we're going on to our staff picks.
And we're staying in the movie.
This is your pick.
Exactly.
All
Reality
right.
Bites.
Yeah.
This is the Posies.
Oh, man.
And this is the song Going, Going, Gone. You guys know what that's from?
The phrase?
Yeah.
Where?
Going, going, gone.
Home run.
That's right.
Oh, yes.
So,
yes.
I don't know if it has anything to do with the album. I could not understand the lyrics. But it's an interesting phrase, but basically the guy doesn't know if there's something wrong with me. And basically I think it's sort of thinking the mentality of people. Am I getting nuts and going, gone? But
as in your sanity.
Yeah, but like I said, I've said this many times, I've bought compilation albums and this is one of the songs. Very deep cut. A lot of people, I forget, there was one guy says, Brian Boone of Pop Dose said the one song that was actually current to 94, because a lot of those songs were kind of before, that boasted a legitimate rock creed to the generation corporate hating Xers, that reality, that this song was the song that came out of Washington.
Oh.
They were from the Washington area too.
Yep.
So they started in 97.
94.
I mean, in 87. They started in 87. It was 94. My problem.
Well, so in 87, that's when Brian said Alice in Chains started. Yeah.
Exactly. And they were in Washington also. And another thing, band member Ken Stringfell was once reported dating Winona Ryder.
Oh.
It seemed like she dated a lot of rock stars at that time. But, you know,
this
was
before or after she started shoplifting.
Oh.
Allegedly.
The song kind of has a Smithereens feel to me. I don't know. It just sort of has that. Of course, I did a staff pick or album pick of the Smithereens. So. But it's considered one of the generation's unhits. I really do like it. That guitar solo in there was just cranking.
Yeah. Listen to these guys coming in. Yeah, I like that.
Kind of a Friends feel.
Yeah.
It also, that little chorus makes me think of the Beatles a little bit for some reason.
Mm.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, how they come in like that.
Well, they also have a track. Their biggest success song was Dream All Day. It was number four on the modern rock track. So, and it was very much on MTV and alternative radio. And that was actually kind of predated this song. And the Posies actually performed with Burt Bacharach on the recording of his song "What the World Needs Now Is Love." It was featured in the movie Austin Powers: International Man of Mystery. One thing about these guys is they're still out there touring with the original lineup from the classic lineup.
That's unusual.
So now we're going to move on to different staff picks, and this night we're going to Rob.
Yeah.
Rob, what you got?
Well, this is an interesting one. If you're not looking at our screen here to see what's coming up, you may or may not remember who this is. You may or may not remember this. Listen to the sitar at the beginning. This has got kind of a cool sound. And this is not a grunge band. Now you know who it is.
Scorpions.
Yeah, listen to that. Great voice there. This is the Scorpions. The voice you're hearing is Klaus Meine. This is the song Under the Same Sun, and it's from their 12th studio album called Face the Heat. I just love his voice. So, this is their 12th album. Do you know when they started? They were founded in Germany. They're a German band.
Mm-hmm.
Take a guess at when the Scorpions started.
75.
It was in the 70s, I'm going to think.
1964.
Whoa.
What?
Yes. Yeah.
That's when I was born.
It? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So they went through quite a few different iterations.
How many original members are still in that group?
Yeah. I love the way he's singing. This song is kind of about, it's political. It's about coming together. And it's about, you know, we all live under the same sun. We all walk under the same moon. Why can't we live as one?
Mm-hmm.
Like talking about people around the planet. And the video is showing people in different areas of the world. And there's like a seabird covered in oil. And then there's an Eskimo woman and kids. And then there's these explosions in oil fields. And then the musicians are playing in the desert, or there's black and white fire. And then there's Steven Seagal.
What?
I have no idea why he shows up in the video. But
the peacemaker, huh?
Yeah, yeah. The Rolling Stone says that the Scorpions are the heroes of heavy metal. This doesn't sound like a heavy metal, but it's one of the rock ballads. So they did a good job on both of those. They were kind of known for, you know, hard rock, heavy metal, but they did these power ballads, I guess.
Yeah.
A number of times.
And remakes of Slade songs.
Yeah. they brought in a new producer for this album, and it gave them a little bit more of a metal sound than what they had with what they had before. MTV, they liked them a lot, called them the ambassadors of rock, and these are the bands, some of the bands that say they were influenced by them. Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Metallica, Megadeth, Skid Row, Cinderella. There's quite a few bands that say, oh yeah, Scorpions. They were ranked number 46 on VH1's Greatest Artists of Hard Rock.
Hmm.
And Rock You Like a Hurricane was VH1's number 18 song on the 100 Greatest Hard Rock Songs. So they've done some amazing things. Yeah, in 2015... the group celebrated its 50th anniversary. That just blew my mind.
That is crazy.
Something else that's interesting is their logo, the word, the Scorpions. That logo, they've used the same one since 1975. They've never changed it, so.
One of my favorite performances of the Scorpions is when they opened up for The Wall in 1990, you know, and right there in Potsdamer Platz.
Yeah.
I thought that was incredible when they came out on that big, huge stage and sang in the flesh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What a great way to start the show.
Yeah. You should be able to find that on...
It's on DVD. It's
YouTube.
You know, it's all, yeah. Yeah, you can watch it.
Well, this is kind of a, I was just looking to see what band from January of 94 do I want to look into a little bit, and I figured this would be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Check out their video.
Now we're going to move on to our fan of the show, Joel Neighbors. He's got his staff pick that he's going to
All
work
right.
with. And Joel, what are you looking at?
Just a little old band from Texas.
I thought it was the grunge band.
No, it's interesting you say that because this was during the grunge movement, obviously. And
right.
these guys had to kind of stay relevant, so to speak. But like I say, ZZ Top, if you haven't figured it out just from the intro licks. This is off their 11th album, Antenna. Actually, their first album with RCA. They had been longtime Warner Brothers guys, and this is the first time they had switched over to RCA. Came out in January of 94. Spent 4 weeks at number one on the mainstream rock. This was actually the last song that they had that charted.
Huh.
You know, they had a lot of success earlier. You know, Eliminator, Afterburner, Recycler, all those things from the 80s. You know, Eliminator 83, Afterburner 85. Going back to the video of MTV, you know, MTV was huge for ZZ Top.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Those videos were, you know, Shark Dressed Man and Legs.
Oh, man.
And,
yeah. Yeah, they have a documentary out that's pretty good.
Oh, Netflix has it, yeah.
Yeah, Netflix.
Well, speaking of bands that are celebrating 50 years, they're celebrating, they were going to do a 50 anniversary tour this summer, but obviously with the
COVID,
the pandemic, they couldn't do it.
They've been around for quite a while, you know, even back to, you know, 73 with the Trace Hombres, which is where a lot of people really
We featured that album.
Just, you know, three chord blues, and they just play it with some attitude, and they just get after it, and I mean, that's really what you need.
Isn't it crazy that they can do all this with just the three of them? I mean,
yeah, three. You know, you got Billy Gibbons on vocals and guitar, Dusty Hill on the bass, and Frank Beard on drums. And interesting enough, Frank Beard is the one who is without the beard.
Exactly.
yeah, they just, you know, three piece band for most of their stuff. In the 80s, they introduced the synthesizers, some drum kits, what they called cyber blues, to try to keep up with, you know, the new stuff going on. They kind of had to recreate themselves in the 80s. But, yeah, they just, you know, three-chord blues, and they just get after it with some attitude. Interesting, the album Antenna, the name, came from the high-powered radio stations back in the 50s and 60s that were kind of on the border towns of Mexico and Texas.
Well, the song Heard It on X.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of going back to the albums, I bought the CD. It was called the ZZ Top Six Pack. And had the first six albums, so you could actually sit there, and it's a great, if you want to download the whole thing, that's an easy one to download and just get them all, because it is very good blues, and like you said, you know, Heard It on the X, Beer Drinkers.
You know, they had some really risque lyrics for a lot of their songs.
Surely You Jest.
Yeah, a little double entendre.
What,
you know,
Pearl
younger
Necklace
kids,
is
you don't,
not like a Pearl Necklace?
Yeah, Pearl Necklace, Tube Steak Boogie, you know, you don't really get that until later on in your life. Wait a minute.
How offensive.
And even this song, you know, they really never said what this song was about. But if you listen to some of the words, shook my soul, stole my dough, I'm just a pin cushion, do everything she asks. You know, to me, this is a biker bar song. You know, you hear this song and you think biker bar in Daytona, and the DJ coming up, he goes, you know, next up on the main stage, we've got Bambi. You know, that's where I go with this song, but... And I dare anybody to listen to this song and at some point not play the air guitar.
Oh, yeah.
You cannot consider yourself an air guitarist if you don't at some point break
right,
into...
That's my specialty.
I own a house close to Daytona. Daytona is the hood, buddy. You want to kind of stay away from that downtown Daytona. Go north or go south.
I was fortunate enough back in the 80s, we would go down to Bike Week.
Oh, yeah.
Had a friend, his dad would take us down, and we would go to the motocross race, the street cross, but... At some point, he would venture into, you know, Boot Hill Saloon and the Rat's Hole for the Chopper Show. And, you know, he knew enough people that we could get kind of taken in as 14-year-olds. And it was a very eye-opening experience.
Joel grew up a lot that
I grew up
summer.
A lot
Joel
summer.
Saw more than most people do at 40.
Yeah, great, great song.
Yeah, thanks.
He became
Absolutely.
A bartender after that.
Thanks for bringing that, Joel.
Yeah,
glad to have you with us.
All right, we're bringing it all back around to Brian. Brian. Now, this is your staff pick. What you got?
See if you recognize it here after the first few chords. It doesn't necessarily fit. I know it doesn't fit into the grunge rock. It doesn't fit into the blues rock that Joel just brought to us, but it does fit into something that was grasped by the music industry and by MTV back in the 1990s. This is the Cranberries, and it's called Linger.
Ah. It's a beautiful song.
The thing about it is, though, MTV, they were starting to get, we kind of touched on it earlier, about they were starting to get more rap, they were starting to get more of that techno stuff. But when they came out with this song, MTV said, oh, this is the great, this is a great alternative. And they put it into the high play group, and it was played over and over into their main main peak hours. The Cranberries guitarist's name's Noel Hogan, and he wrote the music for this song, but he didn't write the lyrics. So they brought in a lady by the name of Dolores O'Riordan. That's who you hear singing. She joined the band, and the first singer was named Niall Quinn. It was kind of a dark song. It wasn't, you know, as you can hear, the music's beautiful, like you said, Wayne.
Got the strings.
Yep, but O'Riordan came in. She auditioned for the band. She had some ideas for the song. So after she was hired, she wrote her own set of lyrics, and here's what you get.
Ah.
So you kind of find a diamond in the rough, don't you?
Yeah.
So she wrote her, basically about a song of regret. It was based on a soldier she once fell in love with, and she couldn't get over him. So this is what you hear about, you know. It's an emotional girly sound. Basically, it's described here on Song Facts.
That's most of your picks, I think, Brian.
I think so.
Emotional girly sound.
Emotionally girly sound.
He's a girly man.
But it was a huge departure, because before that, the band was really kind of in an alternative, new wave, kind of a, you know, popish sound.
And power pop.
Something. And it wasn't working well. So here, like I said, O'Riordan comes in, changes the lyrics, and it just explodes.
What's that song phrase? When you're happy, you hear the music. When you're sad, you hear the words.
Yeah.
Ooh, I hadn't heard that before.
You know, you hear it and you say, this is a cool song, but then you listen to the words, and like you said, that's when you pick up on, wow, this is not...
As I said, she wrote this is a song about her feelings after her breakup of her first boyfriend. And we all remember those first loves, don't we, guys?
Yeah, the thing is you do have to kind of, she's talking about letting it linger. The guy sort of still kind of lets you, you know, yeah, we'll go see each other every once in a while, but really I'm not interested.
Let's remain friends.
Yeah, let's remain friends, or friends with benefits, or whatever else.
Oh.
And it doesn't work. You have to just cut it off and just go, boom, I'm not going to see you anymore if you're on the sad end of this. You can't sit there no matter how you're trying to react to this.
And she was another tragic case. I mean, she drowned later on.
Yeah, she died, 3 years ago at the age of 41. Young, well, all four of us have seen that day go by. But, yeah, 41 years old or 40 years old, she was young, and she died tragically. But she's talking about her feelings for this guy.
I haven't heard this song in a while intentionally, because they played it so much. To be honest with you, I got sick of it. I didn't like it. And I don't like the word linger. I think it's a weird word, but it is a pretty song. So I appreciate it now, Brian, because
it's a great story. I mean, until you actually do the real research on it, and you hear about why they wrote it, and it's pretty cool.
As Joe talked about, this is a generational song. This is not this is a song pretty much, you know, your grandmother can listen to.
Yeah. Nice little ending there.
Yeah, it's just very peaceful and maybe kind of thing you want to listen to before you put your head down to bed at night.
Yeah. All right.
Now we're going to go on to our instrumental. And since we didn't say a whole lot about music or TV or movies in January of 1994, we're going to catch up on that. Stand-up comedian George Carlin gets his own TV show on
Fox. I remember
Fox.
That.
The Peanuts special. You're in the Super Bowl, Charlie Brown, is broadcast. You guys, I don't even
remember
that one.
You're in the Super Bowl?
I think that they were getting very commercialized.
Exactly.
The Charlie Brown, the Peanuts gang was becoming involved in some kind of advertising schemes.
During a segment at NBC Today, Brian Gumbel asked, "What is the internet anyway?"
And Al Gore said, "I created it."
Tech Wars, Babylon 5, and Ancient Mysteries debut. Cesar Romero dies. He played the Joker, if you remember.
Yeah.
Telly Savalas, he died also. He was
who loves your baby.
A couple of movies. Cabin Boy with Chris Elliott, if you remember him. The Air Up There with Kevin Bacon. House Party 3 with Kid and Play. In music of January 1994, accused of molesting a 13-year-old boy, Michael Jackson settles a civil lawsuit out of court.
That was in 94, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Harry Nilsson. He's a singer-songwriter, died of a heart attack. We'll probably do a Nilsson Smilsson probably album. It's a very good album. Bryan Adams becomes the first major Western music star to perform in Vietnam since the end of the Vietnam War. We had talked about Bryan Adams being the top of the charts then. He was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the albums that came out, King's X, Dog Man, Jimmy Eat World, their title album came out. New Kids on the Block. Who all here were New Kids on the Block fans?
next.
And also, next. Alice in Chains. We didn't talk about the fact that this is an Alice in Chains song, and this is our instrumental, and it's called Whale and Wasp.
Exactly.
It's from that same album that Brian featured.
Tori Amos had Under the Pink. She's kind of in that Cranberries type sound.
Mm-hmm.
The Meat Puppets, Too High to Die. I did a staff pick of that. And Black Sabbath have Cross Purposes. This has been January 1994. I'm Wayne.
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Joel.
We'll see you next time. Hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to What the Riff? We hope you enjoyed the songs we had on tap today. Please tell your friends about us. Check us out at whattheriff.com and follow us on Facebook. Special thanks to our sponsors, Wright Column Financial, Stanton Electric, and Marbury Creative Group. That's all for this week. See you next week on What the Riff?